this presentation, I got a call from Steve Evatt to talk about analytical modeling, which is really something I always very much enjoyed. And so I thought I'd go back to some of the work that we have done at the Salinity Lab with quite a large group of people. As you can see here, Feike Lai was certainly involved with many of these things. Nobo Tarida, and quite a few others in one way or another. I want to acknowledge Bill Elves, Scott Bradford, Bill Jury. We incorporated some of his work in our StanMod computer software packages. Jack Parker, some of you may remember him from his work with CXDFIT, Walt Russell, and then also and Todd Skaggs and Ed Tang, and then also Jurka Simonek and Mirek Zaina, who then just a few years ago incorporated all these models in this studio of analytical models, the StanMod code. So I wanted to revisit some of these computer codes and some of the applications, and I thought it would be quite appropriate at the occasion of Art's retirement here. I have to go back, so forward. I'm not going to really talk about analytical solutions as such. When I started this work many years ago, I was working mostly with Laplace transforms, as was in the mid-70s, late-70s, early-80s. Quite a few other approaches. Feike, with his two-dimensional modeling, three-dimensional modeling, used Laplace Fourier transforms, integral transform techniques also, and we had some earlier talks about that. And then Green's function, again, Feike worked quite extensively with those in three dimensions. And this is all I'm going to say about analytical solution procedures as such. Rather, I would like to talk a little bit about the various codes that we developed over the years and then were incorporated in the StanMod code, in the StanMod software. I'm not going to talk about the Stream 2 models that also were part of CXDFIT and the pesticide screening models that later were incorporated that Bill Jury developed. If I have time, which is not quite sure, we talked a little bit about transport and structured media and also in river systems, since those things can be quite easily extended to other processes. So the StanMod software then is really a studio or a suite of analytical models that includes a large number of one-dimensional transport models, as shown here, that started really in the mid-70s when I was working with Pete Waringa on analyzing laboratory transport experiments. And then later we were extended with Feike Lai, Scott Bradford, and certainly Nobo Tarida to two- and three-dimensional models. We incorporated a couple of other models. This is a decay chain model, and then again the screening model of Bill Jury. And these were incorporated into one common Windows-based environment. The work goes back to my own PhD work, where I looked at soil transport experiments, especially at the time with pesticide transport. This is a familiar setup that Pete Waringa developed at New Mexico State at the time, just a soil column, its fraction collector, and so on. And of course, what we ended up with were these type of breakthrough curves, and at the time the question was how to analyze those. For that you need then, of course, the transport equation. We worked initially with the equilibrium transport equation, which was already a challenge in the 70s. Now this is quite normal to use. Just equilibrium sorption, so you get the standard advection dispersion or convection dispersion equation. At that time, and that was again the mid-70s, there was not a whole lot of work done in that area. Actually, the earliest analytical solution is probably the one by Labates and Amundsen, is 1952. But most of those were later developed in the 60s and 70s. You may remember some of the work that Tom Lindstrom, who worked with Larry Boersma in Corvallis, they were very active. Just not the equilibrium transport problems, but also non-equilibrium later. And then with various decay and production terms in there. Here is a solution of Magdi Salim. Is probably one of the first in the soil physics area that used integral transforms. So this is for a finite system. These were the solutions that eventually became available. There are really two sets of solutions. One is for a semi-infinite system, and you see here the CDX that goes to infinity, and then the finite systems. the finite systems of solutions, of course, have the predicament that they are infinite series, and so you have to solve the eigenvalues here, sticking back in the equations, which is fine to some extent, but they very often don't converge very quickly, especially for large values of the Piclet number, which is velocity length over dispersion coefficient. So that's why most of us prefer to stay with the semi-infinite solutions, and then basically I've shown that these columns were part of a semi-infinite system, and of course the natural boundary condition to use was a third type boundary condition, which preserves mass for resonant concentrations. And then later in some of the work with Jack Parker, we showed that we have to use these flux concentrations for breakthrough curves. Yeah. So then the question was, how to apply these things to the breakthrough curves? There was not a whole lot available initially. Most of the methods were trial and error methods, some graphical methods. So we started experimenting with these parameter estimation approaches, where basically the idea is to minimize some kind of a goal or objective function. In this case, just a simple weighted least squares approach. And that worked well. The procedure that we used was a Markit-Leyvenberg approach. Of course, many others later came into use, but this has worked very well for us, both for the transport experiments as well as for multi-step outflow, other problems involving unsaturated flow. So it's just one or two examples. Those are those data that we showed earlier. And of course, these estimation methods can be extended to any type of breakthrough curve or other curves. This is an example of a large lysimeter we had some data from that from Los Alamos National Lab. And you can see here it was fitted to five breakthrough curves, or basically with large suction candles in the column. There was a problem here at the 264 centimeters. We're still not quite sure if that was preferential flow or perhaps maybe this is 164 centimeter. we're still worrying about that. But anyway, that was the data that we got. You can see that it fits very well. And of course, these things could be extended to any type of model. This was analyzed, a pesticide transport model with the equilibrium formulation that didn't quite work well. So we could go to these two-site or two-region models. In this case, the two-region formulation, where you assume, you know, there's no flow in the matrix, so this QB would be zero, and you work with a mobile concentration and an immobile concentration. So when you apply that, then you could get at least a good fit. And the same, of course, with the two-site sorption models. Then Feike came along. He extended that to 2 and 3D. There's one example. This is the 3D ADE code, so this is equilibrium, and then with the N in there, 3N, 3D ADE is with non-equilibrium transport. Just one simple formulation, you get here a little bitmap that we got from the windows that shows the geometry, so this will be a source at the sole surface, or it could be, X could also be groundwater flow laterally. Yeah, and then here's the complete solution for this case. That includes zero-order production and first-order decay. So it's a fairly standard equation. And this, again, was incorporated. I'm not going to go further into details, but these were, again, incorporated in the StanMod code. It's a very user-friendly system. Probably many of you have seen that. And actually, when you select the particular problem here, so this is that rectangular source at the surface, you see here this little bitmap showing the geometry. I think I have another one here where you have a buried initial condition. This is a cylindrical initial distribution with a third type boundary condition. Think also about groundwater flow where it goes laterally. So these things can be applied to quite a few different transport problems. And then with the StanMod code, you can look at the output in various ways. This is just one distribution here of that particular problem. Here was that source. Actually, you can also do flow animation. So that takes care of most of the things in StanMod. I wanted to say a few things about these decay chains. I remember working on that for a very long time in the mid-80s. Decay chains are, of course, occur very very often in soil science. good example, nitrification, denitrification change. Actually, where we do not have this sidewards sink, so it would be just a strain, straight decay chain. But you know, it can be applied to chlorinated hydrocarbons, and I will give you one example for that. Pesticides, radionuclide decay chains, of course, very much was part of this, and a number of other things. And the governing equations. The way we solved it at the time was with what we call the Bateman equations, which made it very nice to include not just transport in the soil, but also have a basically a mass balance equation for a waste disposal site at the top, which has a well mixed, which is considered to be a well mixed system. And we could account for the disappearance and decay of the radionuclides or chemicals in the waste layer. Anyway, when you solve this, it's fairly straightforward now. It wasn't that easy 10 years or 15 years ago. One of the main problems with the solution was that in some cases this AIJK, if you can look there, which really goes back to these lambdas in these Bateman equations, but sometimes these values are very large, so the square root becomes negative, which means that we have to work with complex complex arguments of these RFC functions, and there's a lot of bookkeeping involved to put that right into the Fortran program. And now we have Mathematica and a number of other things that makes it much easier. But still, sometimes these solutions, even with Mathematica, have quite a few rounds of errors. One example I wanted to show, let's actually we applied this to a decay chain of PCE to TCE, then DCE, it's really branched and then comes back together to vinyl chloride. So we lump these things together, and actually we solved that numerically with Hydrous-1D. We used this example in our Hydrous courses, and we applied it to a particular profile in northern Belgium. This fellow here, Sönch, is from the Catholic University in Leuven, measured these hydraulic properties. It's a very layered profile. We simulated that with transient flow, potential surface flux. This was the result. It's a fairly dry area in the north of Belgium. This is the recharge rate, basically, that comes out of the bottom of a 1 meter profile. So you can see that the average recharge rate over, 350 days, we simulated over 1 year, is about 35 centimeters. So the average velocity, the Darcyan fluid flux, is 0.1 centimeters per day. So then we also looked at the water content distribution, which is very heterogeneous still. We wanted to use this analytical approach to it. So then we took a very rough average. What is a good average? So we thought just taking 0.1 as the average water content in the root zone, and then we can calculate, because we know the water content is 0.1, or assume it, the velocity, the flux is 0.1, the Darcy Buckingham flux, so we get a pore water velocity of 1 centimeter per day. And then we can also calculate, if we assume that the bulk density is about the same, also we used an average value here, and we can calculate the retardation factor of these four species in the decay chain. And then again, we simulated it with Hydrous-1D as well as chain, and you can see here that the results were extremely close, or rather surprisingly close. The blue lines, if you can see, are the chain results, and the red ones are the hydrous results. You see it's a little more zagged here with hydrous because of the layering, and some of these bulk densities and other things were different. But this is for PCE going to TCE. The horizontal scales are different, but we just stretch it a little bit. There's a little abnormality here in the chain, so some kind of a round of error played a role there that should not be there. And then here DCE and then phenyl chloride. So you can see that these analytic solutions actually can be very useful for initial or approximate analysis for many transport scenarios. I don't know how much time I have. But I wanted to talk a little bit more. This is basically the models that are in StanMod. Then we also worked quite a lot later on transport in structured media. And going back to these mobile immobile, these two region models, where you have the transport equation, and then we assume this very first approximate first order exchange between then the mobile and an immobile region, where the immobile region and the QB would be zero. There are better ways of doing it when we go to specific geometries of these various systems. For example, in the fractured rock literature, we generally like to work with rectangular fractures here, 2D being the width of the fractures, and 2A being the fracture spacing, basically. And then you can put these the complete formulation in there. So the immobile concentration now is the averaged of the whole of the local concentration versus the lateral dimension. And then you use the diffusion equation here to account for lateral diffusion from the marker pores into the matrix. And this can be solved, and it looks pretty innocent, but it's really not that innocent, because we're talking here about the sinusoidal function and then an exponentially decreasing integrant of this integral. So this is very difficult to solve. But yet we did it along the lines of what the fellow Anders Rasmussen did many years ago. And actually, this can be simplified by assuming that we don't have dispersion in the marker pore region, and we let the fracture spacing go to infinity. And then here, so you get actually just a single complementary error function here, which is much easier to handle, of course. And you can see that the complete solution, which is the solid line versus the approximate solution, they don't differ too much. This is some data that Grisak and Pickens did measured way back with about a 75 centimeter fracture plate tilt sample. Yeah, you can do the same with cylindrical marker pores and so on. Actually, there's one example here. So the differential equations are essentially the same. Of course, now we have a radial diffusion equation. This is an example of some work we did with data that we got from Anne-Marie de Kock-Borne. She works with INRA in France in Avignon. And so it was just completely independent measures, and these are the calculated breakthrough curves. You know, not a perfect fit, but essentially in a conceptual sense, a very very nice description of the data. The problem with these cylindrical marker pore type models is, of course, that they're very difficult. Actually, in this case, the solutions are even more complicated. You have these Bessel function type things, Burrs and Bies and Kurs and Kais, and don't even remember how to, you know. But you look in Karlsruhe and Jaeger, and then you use them. The problem is some of those expansions in Karlsruhe and Jaeger even have errors. So I spent actually a lot of time working this out, but we did it. The idea here, of course, is then that these mobile immobile models are much easier to handle, also numerically in numerical codes. And then the question was, can we define this alpha in terms of some of the parameters that are buried in these geometry-based equations? And the way we did that was to actually look at the transport equation, which is the same for both models, but here you have then that radial diffusion model, and here you have the very simple mobile-immobile model. And so actually we looked at the average concentration in the immobile region in both models, and then we equate those. So we have to solve this radial diffusion equation here in dimensionless form, which comes out with this rather complicated term. We stick it back in, integrate it. We get this CIM, and then we approximate it. So you get this thing for the average immobile concentration for the cylindrical marker pore model. And then this is the same for the two-region model. And then you just equate them, and you get a relationship between the omega, which is the dimensionless rate coefficient in the immobile model, and then this gamma is a dimensionless rate coefficient in the cylindrical marker pore model. You know, and then you put these original parameters back in here. So you have a very nice approximation for the rate coefficient in the mobile-immobile model. And actually, when you stick that back in for a certain geometry, you can see that these approximations are very, very accurate. at least for cylindrical micropores. And that's those are systems where you have a small surface area and a relatively large volume of the soil. It doesn't work very well for spherical aggregates where you have, I'm just about done, where we have a large surface area and a very small volume. So there, this approximation doesn't work so well. The question, of course, is whether spherical aggregates and water flowing around it is equally realistic as micropores, and I don't think it really is. Anyway, one comment about river systems. So you look at these micropore flow models, you can actually cut this in half and put it, lay it on the side, and you can have really nice models for transport in rivers. And actually, in this case, there's a lot of literature now on these hyporheic zones, so you can actually reformulate that a little bit in another way, but the analytic solutions are exactly the same. The idea is that water, solute would diffuse out of the rivers into the sediments. That can be done with cylindrical micropores or just rectangular systems and so on. That's it. I think these type of analytical solutions still serve a purpose, studying solute transport processes. They're very nice educational tools, certainly when people can just look at the processes rather than necessarily the mathematics as such. For initial approximate analysis of surface transport, they're very important also for verifying numerical solutions, and then just the analysis of field of laboratory data in terms of different formulations. Thank you.
Thank you very much.